The Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been helping America's heroes and their families since 9/11. Hero first responders and service members who serve our communities and our country. Those who die in the line of duty or are catastrophically injured. Veterans who fought for our nation's freedom only to return home, fall in tough times, and become homeless. Heroes like Buffalo, New York firefighter Jason Arno and his family. Arno was killed while protecting his community, battling a warehouse fire. He left behind his wife and a young daughter. In their darkest hour, Tunnel to Towers provided Arno's wife and daughter with a mortgage-free home. The foundation lifted a financial burden, enabling them to stay in the home where they made memories with their hero. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Support the families of America's greatest heroes, the families of fallen first responders like Jason Arno, plus Gold Star families with young children, catastrophically injured service members, and homeless veterans. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community and of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The left is still in shock today after the leak of a Supreme Court decision that would overturn the landmark abortion case Roe v. Wade. We'll take a look at the left's insane reaction to Justice Alito's opinion in tonight's Hold the Line. Welcome to Hold the Line. I'm Buck Sexton. The meltdown is happening all over the place from these libs. The mere prospect of the end of their make-believe constitutional right to abortion, because even honest leftists and liberals, Democrats, know that the Supreme Court decision in 1973, Roe v. Wade, was just legal fantasy, fiction. It was absolutely cobbled together using verbal smokescreens and nonsense. So that may go away, which means that they would have to actually explain to the American people, what it is they actually believe. And just to give you a sense of it, it's gone quite a long distance here because the Democrat Party, until about the last 15 years or so, had been holding to this notion. They agree that abortion is not something that is a good thing. It's a sad thing. A life maybe even is lost, they would say, but it was necessary for women to be able to make this choice. Essentially, again, a lot of euphemisms and speaking around the issue. And if you're wondering who took those kinds of positions, I mean, here was Joe Biden back in 2006, a little over 15 years ago, saying, well, watch.
I do not view abortion as a choice and a right. I think it's always a tragedy. And I think that it should be rare and safe. And I think we should be focusing on how to limit the number of abortions. And there ought to be able to have a common ground and consensus as to do that.
Oh, it's always a tragedy. Remember, that was Joe Biden not too long ago. He's currently the president, who acts like the possible overturning of Roe v. Wade. And it has not happened yet, folks. And there's a lot of pressure. We've got to remember, there's a lot of pressure that the left is bringing to bear right now. The whole purpose of the leak was to try to get a change in the decision before the decision is official. So that has to be in the background of this entire conversation.
But Biden then was saying it was a tragedy. Now Biden is part of the chorus of hysteria, saying that, oh my gosh, if they overturn Roe, you know, they might even ban LGBT children from being in the same classroom as other children. Watch this.
What happens if you have a state change the law saying that that children who are LGBTQ can't be in classrooms with other children? Is that legit under the way that the decision is written? What are the next things that are going to be attacked? Because this MAGA crowd is really the most extreme political organization that's existed in American history.
There's so much just intellectual dumpster fire going on in that one clip that we played you from the current president of the United States. First of all, it's not MAGA extreme to be opposed to Roe v. Wade. The pro-life movement, Republicans, conservatives, have been opposed to Roe v. Wade for 50 years. There's absolutely nothing. In fact, one of the core tenets, one of the primary goals of the conservative legal movement has been to finally give an honest assessment of the constitutionality of the right to abortion established in Roe v. Wade, because it's so obviously non-existent. There is no right to abortion in the Constitution, which anybody can see. And there was certainly no implied right to abortion either. And when you ask people about this, to try to even explain why they're so adamant that this exists, you hear all these different explanations because they don't even know. They're just making it up as they go along. But, you know, the problem with listening to Joe Biden remember, he is technically a lawyer and has been a member of the United States Senate for decades, then was vice president, now is president, is just been pushed ahead by a Democrat party that loves an empty suit with a big grin, which is what Joe Biden is, and now one in cognitive decline. But to be fair, not only is Joe Biden in a state of cognitive decline, even in his moments where he seems pretty clear, you are reminded that his legal analysis is what you would expect from somebody who has an IQ that is at about room temperature. Listen to his explanation here of, well, the current constitutional debate over abortion. Watch.
As I said when I when this hit as I was getting on the plane to go down to Alabama, this is about a lot more than abortion. I hadn't read the whole opinion at that time. But this reminds me of the debate with Robert Bork. Bork believed the only reason you had any inherent rights was because the government gave them to you. If you go back and look at the opening comments of the Bork Biden when I was questioning him as chairman, I said, I believe I have the rights that I have, not because the government gave them to me, which you believe, but because I'm just a child of God, I exist.
So there's a natural law right to abortion, as Joe Biden may. What is he even, what does Joe Biden think he is arguing here? Forget about what he's actually saying. What in that mind, as well as it continues to function with all the cobwebs and the screeching of the mechanism as it just grows more rust over time, what does he think he's saying? It's not even clear. It doesn't even matter. It's just blather to go on the blather heap of, well, the left wants this, the Democrats want this, so they should have it. This is legally speaking, an indefensible position that they've managed to maintain for over 50 years because they say, shut up, we're in charge. We got what we wanted, now it can never change. Well, that's actually not how the system works. But as I said, that's what they're planning right now, just to shout down everybody and to even pressure a Supreme Court justice into changing his or her opinion on this one. That's the whole purpose of the leak of the draft opinion. We all see it. And then there are true morons out there, a Congressman Swalwell, among the dumbest members of Congress, which is saying a lot because there are a lot of dumbasses in the Congress. Here he is saying that the Republicans won't stop with banning abortion. They want to ban interracial marriage. Do you want to save that? Well, then you should probably vote. What is this idiot talking about? No one wants to ban interracial marriage in the Republican Party. This is just distraction, smear tactics, and lunacy. Lunacy. But what else are they going to do? Argue the indefensible proposition that abortion was implied in the Constitution? Why? Well, because reasons. Jamie Raskin, another member of Congress. If Alito's majority destroys the right to privacy, states could jail women and doctors for abortion and contraception offenses. They could also compel women to be sterilized for unfitness to reproduce, as Virginia sterilized thousands in the last century. So their argument now seems to be, I hate this Supreme Court decision, therefore I'm just going to make up that they're going to do crazy things in the Supreme Court that no one's arguing for because it will scare people. That seems to be, yes, there have been poor Supreme Court decisions in the past, and then they were overturned. And what they can't seem to figure out is that Planned Parenthood v. Casey and Roe v. Wade is on the wrong side of the Constitution. It has now been righted. So they don't seem to get it, right? They keep saying, oh my gosh, we could just do the same thing them say. So wait, are they Plessy versus Ferguson advocates, separate versus equal, or are they Brown v. Board of Education, equal and due process for all, equal rights for all? I'm just wondering, is that, where do they come down on this issue? Well, it doesn't matter. It's just scare tactic. And Planned Parenthood, of course, which has been running abattoirs for infants for decades now, it's disgusting. Here they are with the CEO saying, don't worry, we're going to get all the rage out there from, particularly from women who go home to sad houses that they're alone in with cats. Watch.
When they found out what was happening in Texas, they started filling state houses in Florida. They started filling state houses in other places because they know that the fight right now is on the ground and in these states. And so we are going to continue to capture that rage, and we're going to continue to make sure that they understand who is accountable right now. The last administration appointed three justices who will be responsible for us losing a constitutional right that we have held for 49 years.
Because it was a lie. See, that right was a lie all along. We'll have more on the fallout from the leaked decision with author and columnist David Marcus coming up here in a moment. Let's talk about protecting your home. I'm not somebody who gets all freaked out about things I don't have to, but when I heard about home title theft, this is really worrying because it's so easy for the bad guys to do this. Some cyber thief forges your name off the title of your home because your home's title exists online. Then they take out loans against your home, and guess what? You don't find out until the payment demands arrive or perhaps even an eviction notice. What can you do to protect yourself? Normal identity theft programs don't work. You need Home Title Lock. All you have to do right now is go to HomeTitleLock.com, and you can check and see if you're a victim of this crime and don't even know it. Go to HomeTitleLock.com. Again, that's HomeTitleLock.com. Protect your home today. Protect your title with HomeTitleLock.com. David Marcus up next.
Those Republican leaders who are trying to weaponize the use of the law against women, well, we say, how dare they? How dare they tell a woman what she can do and cannot do with her own body? How dare they? How dare they try to stop her from determining her own future? How dare they try to deny women their rights and their freedoms?
Vice President Kamala Harris expressing outrage at the prospect of Americans losing their right to kill the unborn, or as Democrats call it, menstruating persons' rights, of course. Supreme Court has seemingly prepared to correctly decide that this was never a constitutional right in the first place, we know. The left is claiming the recently leaked Supreme Court decision, or would-be decision, is just the latest evidence of extremism within the Republican Party, even though conservatives have been openly campaigning to overturn Roe for over 50 years. Meanwhile, Democratic lawmakers promising to introduce legislation to codify the right to an abortion without limitation to federal law, a position so extreme that it's been rejected by nearly every single Western nation on the planet. So who are really the radicals here? Joining me now is author and columnist David Marcus. David, good to have you.
Thanks, Buck.
I have to say, one of the challenges here in this, now this sort of frenzy and this moment of hysteria is that the people that claim that they're so certain that they have the answers here on the left about why abortion is so important and dare I even say sacred to them, have a whole variety of different arguments that are offered up that are often even in contradiction to the other arguments from their own side. Like, oh, no one's actually saying that a third trimester abortion would be okay, when in fact that is what a lot of Democrats and activists say.
Oh yeah, I mean there are activists who think that killing a baby after they've already been born is something that ought to be on the table. You know, look, there's a huge shift in the language of the Democratic Party over the last 25 years in regard to abortion. We don't hear safe, legal, and rare anymore, right? That was the go-to. And safe, legal, and rare acknowledged that there was a tragic loss of a human life when an abortion took place. But it said, look, this is a nuanced situation. Today, we're in the age of celebrate your abortion. You know, go to brunch with your friends, get a cake, you know. It's sad and disturbing, but it's not new, Buck. I mean, we've been, I think Katha Pollitt wrote the book Pro in 2014. I might be off on that, something like that. But that really announced this of like, this is not something that we apologize for anymore. This is something that we think is an unreconstructed good.
Kirsten Powers, who I believe is she's a Democrat strategist, whatever that means. At CNN, yes, well, same idea, said, if you think abortion is wrong, don't get an abortion. It's not okay to impose your religious views on others. Why should a Jew, a Muslim, etc., have to live according to your interpretation of the Bible? If you don't get this, please don't ever use the phrase religious freedom again. It's amazing how many people in public life that are supposed to understand politics and at some level constitutional law, even if they're not actually lawyers, just don't know what the hell they're talking about. I mean, just blather on. They clearly never read the draft decision that, you know, Alito was writing for the five justices who we believe are going to be voting to overturn. This hasn't happened yet. There's so much ignorance from people that are supposed to know. And I find that troubling too, David.
Yeah, I mean, murder's illegal, you know, and in the Ten Commandments, it says thou shalt not kill. That's not some conflict of church and state. It's absurd. I mean, look, yes, there are religious reasons why people oppose abortion. There are also very strong scientific reasons, you know, including the fact that these babies can feel pain as they're being ripped apart. I think the response is troubling, and I think that we've reached a point where I wrote an article 2 years ago for The Federalist, and I said, this is war now. And I do think it's war. I think either you believe that killing babies is bad or you don't believe that killing babies is bad. I think all the nuance has been lost out of this conversation.
And then, of course, you hear some of the, I guess, constitutional or legal analysis that's out there. Here's an example, MSNBC's Elie Mystal on how the reason the founding fathers, I don't know if you know this, Dave, the reason the founding fathers didn't write in an abortion constitutional right, which clearly does not exist, but they pretended it did. But anyway, the reason they didn't do it is because they're bad people. Watch.
Alito's fundamental legal reasoning is that abortion is not a fundamental right because it doesn't go back to the founding, because the founding fathers didn't recognize abortion as a fundamental right. And he's right about that. The founding fathers didn't recognize abortion as a fundamental right because the founding fathers were racist, misogynist jerk faces who didn't believe that women had any rights at all.
I mean, there you go.
Wait, I mean, what do you mean? I knew that the founding fathers are racist, misogynist, jerk faces. You didn't know that? I think we all know that at this point, right? I mean, but that speaks to the point, right? So the founders were racist, misogynist, jerk faces. I'm sure I'm that as well. And so now we have to abandon everything that they did.
Can I just add, David, there was the Roe created the belief that the founding fathers actually did create somehow a constitutional right. It was a constitutional right. They didn't argue it was a natural law right. It was a constitutional right. To abortion. So it used to be the founding fathers were geniuses beyond the likes of which we could have never. They essentially had a time machine. They could go in the future and see that this procedure would happen, and they wrote it in the Constitution. Now that they lose it, though, they're jerk faces. That's
ridiculous. I mean, look. I don't know. Have you ever seen a picture of the Supreme Court that decided Roe? Yeah, because it's not a Benetton ad, my friend.
Seven white guys were allowed to come up with the abortion law initially, right?
Fine.
That's how it,
right? That was fine. That was totally okay for those seven white guys to express their opinion on Roe v. Wade.
Can I ask you, do you think it's fair to say now, because I put this out there, and I know this really annoys people on the left, but I think it's actually true. I think that the left as a political ideology has just turned into a lot of verbal smoke screens and whining around, I want what I want, and the system, politics, the law, whatever it is, has to give me what I want, or else throw the whole system over.
No, that's exactly right. You know, I have a piece up at Fox News today, where I talk about all these baseless accusations of racism, right? Elon Musk's a racist and Tucker Carlson's a racist. And what's most insidious about this is not the fact that these are baseless, ridiculous claims, even though they are. What's most insidious is that the message the left sends is not only does their racism allow you to not engage with their ideas, it compels you to do so. To engage with the ideas of you or me or Tucker or Elon or these people is to legitimize systemic racism. And so you just can't do it. It's the death of discourse and it's the death of democracy. And I mean, that's what we're seeing. Eli Mistel isn't making serious arguments. We know he's not. What I don't know is whether this is a cynical political tactic or whether this is something these people actually believe. But either way, the result is the same, and it's really bad.
Always good to see you, David. Appreciate the perspective.
Thanks, Buck.
Conservative author J.D. Vance defeated establishment candidate Josh Mandel in yesterday's GOP Senate primary race in Ohio. Last night's biggest winner, former President Donald Trump. We'll have more on that with the CEO of American Majority, Ned Ryan, when we come back. First, I want to talk to you about protecting your online data. A lot of companies promise your privacy is guaranteed. We know that's not true. That's why you need a new privacy and cybersecurity application tool called Secure. Spelled S-E-K-U-R, Secure is using proprietary encryption and offering secure instant messaging and email. With Secure, all of your communications based on servers and data centers hosted in Switzerland without using any of the big tech platforms. Privacy is a big issue now. Without real security, people can read your emails, messages, even your bank information. Secure will never mine your data and never ask for your phone number. You can send emails to your doctor, banker, lawyer, or anyone with total confidence you're not being spied on by your internet provider or big tech. Secure is your solution to stop the constant theft of your digital identity. It costs only $5 for the messenger, only $10 for the messenger and email combination package. Go to secure.com and take back your privacy today. That's S-E-K-U-R.com and use promo code BUCK for 25% off. Ned Ryan stops by in a moment. Big night in Ohio as GOP Senate candidate J.D. Vance won convincingly in the state primary against his strongest opponent, Josh Mandel. Vance vaulted to the lead in this primary after winning former President Donald Trump's endorsement last month, which came as a surprise to many since Vance, not too long ago, was an outspoken critic of both Trump and the Trump agenda. But last night, he had nothing but praise for Trump during his victory speech. Why?
I have absolutely got to thank the 45th. The President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, ladies and gentlemen, a lot of the fake news media out there, and there are some good ones in the back there. There's some bad ones too, let's be honest. But they wanted to write a story that this campaign would be the death of Donald Trump's America First agenda. Ladies and gentlemen, it ain't the death of the America First agenda.
One of the first big primary races in the books here. Is this giving us a hint of what is going to unfold in the months ahead and leading into these midterms? Let's talk to the man who's got answers on this and a lot of things. CEO of American Majority, Ned Ryan. Ned, good to see you, buddy.
Hey, Buck.
So big win for J.D. Vance, but big win in a sense for Donald Trump, too. Tell us about it.
Yeah, last night was incredible for Trump. He went 22-0 in the Indiana and Ohio primaries. Of course, the one that was getting all the attention on the national front was the Ohio Republican Ohio Senate primary, in which it was J.D. Vance and Josh Mandel and five or six other candidates. Pretty interesting to see the dynamics play out, Buck, over the last 2.5 weeks, call 18 days, in which, you know, JD got the endorsement on April 15th. My only quibble was that I wish it had happened about 30 days earlier. JD gets the endorsement. Club for Growth doubles down on their backing of Josh Mandel. What a lot of people don't know is that over the last 12 days or so, Club for Growth spent $3 to $4 million on television ads in defiance of Trump endorsement. Trump also doubled down. Obviously, Donald Trump Jr. doubled down and was in Ohio working very hard on behalf of J.D. Vance. I mean, this shows that Trump is still the kingmaker in Republican primaries, despite the fact that Club for Growth spent all of that money against J.D. in the last, call it, 2 weeks. But it was about $30 million that was spent on behalf of Josh Mandel or by Josh to actually try and win this nomination, outspending J.D. by best I can tell by about a 2-to-1 margin. So pretty incredible when you realize there was 14 points made up over the last 18 days by JD from the endorsement until his victory last night. He was down 6 points, got the endorsement, wins by just over 8 last night. And it's pretty impressive what Trump is able to do in these Republican primaries.
Here is the percentage breakdown. You just kind of alluded to it there, Ned. JD Vance got 32% of the Ohio Senate primary vote and Josh Mandel 23%. So not only a win, but a pretty considerable margin here. And as you said, a flip of what had seemed to be the case not long ago based on the polling. With that in mind, I mean, now the most important thing is obviously with a very, I mean, I think it's going to be, and I'm actually curious what your predictions are for how we're looking in general for GOP control of the Senate. But Tim Ryan on the Democrat side, he is their nominee. And he took a little shot at Vance last night. Watch this.
The work is just beginning. The fight is just beginning. We're going to heal the country, heal Ohio, and in turn, heal the United States of America. I will promise you victory. Let's go. Let's make this happen. Let's get this seat.
Now, obviously, you and I we're Republicans, we're conservatives, so we're rooting for Vance here. But how do you think, I mean, if you're just giving me the pre-fight highlights here, or rather pre-fight analysis, pardon me, not highlights, tell me how you think he stacks up against Vance.
He's going to get crushed. I mean, this is a state that Trump won by 8 points both times in 2016 and 2020. And tack onto it a year like 2022, in which you have a deeply unpopular Democratic president in the White House, in which inflation's out of control. And you're telling me that you think Tim Ryan's going to be competitive in a state like Ohio? Buck, I would think is probably going to be 7-8 point win for JD. I said publicly in an op-ed not too long ago, in which I said, first of all, it's a great endorsement by Trump for JD, because I believe in Road to Damascus of 50s. Did JD say some ridiculous stuff 6 years ago? Yeah, and we thought through it actually multiple times, in which I said, you better double down on the America First and go for it. That all to say, in this op-ed, I said, if whoever wins the primary, Republican primary, is on the path to almost assuredly winning the general election because of the dynamics of Ohio, because of the dynamics of 2022. And to further that point, Buck, I think we've got an excellent shot in picking up seats in Arizona, in Georgia. There's breaking news that in Nevada, the police, order of police, have switched their endorsement and now endorsed a Republican candidate, Adam Laxalt. Look at New Hampshire as well. I think we're going to hold with Ron Johnson in Wisconsin. So I wouldn't be surprised if we have a, call it, 3-to-4 seat pickup at a minimum in the U.S. Senate this fall.
Now we've got the PA, Pennsylvania Senate primary coming up here shortly. Dr. Oz is running, who is the Trump-endorsed candidate there. I mean, Dr. Oz, people right. know, right, who Dr. Oz is. And he's running against McCormick, who was married to Dina Powell, worked in the Trump White House. He's married to Dina Powell. He's a billionaire hedge fund guy. First of all, how do you think this shakes out? And why did Oz get the endorsement over McCormick, in your mind, from Trump?
Well, I was actually talking with Trump about a month ago through all the Senate race endorsements, and he asked me about Pennsylvania, and I said, very bluntly, I hate them all. And the next week, you know, he endorses Oz, and I completely understood why he endorsed Oz over McCormick. First of all,
Can we put a pause in it, Ned, for once, just because we actually have that endorsement. Want to have you react to it for one sec. Here, play it, guys.
I endorsed another person today, Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania. Dr. Oz. Great guy, a good man, Harvard educated, tremendous, tremendous career, and they liked him for a long time. That's like a poll. You know, when you're in television for 18 years, that's like a poll. That means people like you, but he's a great guy.
Sorry, Ned. As you were saying, we wanted to let everyone see the endorsement there.
Just talking with Trump about McCormick versus Oz. First of all, you have political clout if you're Trump. You want to use it. There's only two legitimate candidates in that primary. It's Oz or McCormick. McCormick is in, you know, literally in bed with the Chinese communists in a very direct way over the last 13 years with all his investments through his fund. Oz has actually been extremely helpful to Trump. Trump is very loyal to Oz because of that, especially in 2016 when people were questioning Trump's health. Oz had him on his TV show and said, you're as healthy as anybody and should absolutely run for president. So there's been a relationship in which Oz has been helpful. Trump has been loyal. Oz has been loyal. McCormick is, quite frankly, very bad on one of the most important issues for Trump. And tack on top of that, the person that you just mentioned, Buck, Dina Powell. I told people, if nothing else, the fact that Dave McCormick is married to Dina Powell, that alone is disqualifying for any endorsement from Donald Trump.
Wow. Wow. Why? Ned, I got it. Why? Yeah, explain. I mean, you know more about this than I do.
When you want to talk about a globalist with really, truly antagonistic towards an America First agenda, you know, the crap cake that is Dave McCormick, the icing on top of that is Dina Powell. And I told Trump, I said, you know, sir, I have to tell you, it is one of the biggest question marks in my mind how she ever made it into your White House, because I believe she's deeply antagonistic towards an America First agenda. Not a good person, married to Dave McCormick. And that alone to me, if you talk to a lot of the America First types who are aware of this, Dina Powell's relationship is disqualifying. So all of these things add up. And the Trump endorsement to me makes sense. Again, I will repeat, I don't like anybody in the Pennsylvania Senate, but I hope for Trump's sake, and I think it was a hard endorsement, but he did it, and I hope that it's successful.
Yeah. And a hat tip, by the way, as well, to a Trump-backed candidate and friend of the show, Madison Jezziato Gilbert, who you and I both
yes.
know. She won her party's primary in Ohio's 13th congressional district, so we'll have to have Madison on. Ned, always appreciate you coming down and tell us what's what, man. You come back soon, okay?
Sounds good. Thanks, Buck.
A frustrated Russian military continues to face strong resistance from the armed forces of Ukraine, but Western officials are warning that President Vladimir Putin might be planning an official declaration of war in the coming days. We'll have more on what that could mean for the conflict from the Foundation of Defense of Democracies, Bill Roggio. Right now, I want to tell you about the newest sponsor to Hold the Line, the Silencer Shop. I'm a big supporter of the Second Amendment. For many gun owners, using a suppressor is so important. They protect your hearing, they improve your accuracy by minimizing recoil. Suppressors are 100% legal in 43 states, so if you want to practice safe, accurate shooting, the best way to get your suppressor is through the Silencer Shop. They have a variety of suppressors starting at just $365. My friends at Silencer Shop are the industry leaders in suppressors. They're a Texas-based company that excel at customer service. Each phone call, email, direct message, or comment is answered promptly, and they treat you like family. Customer service reviews are awesome. Go check them out on Trustpilot. Silencer Shop has an average of 4.9 out of 5 stars on over 25,000 reviews. Go right now. See for yourself. Silencershop.com. Again, that's silencershop.com. We'll be right back with more Hold the Line. Victory Day is one of the most important national holidays in Russia. Every May 9th, the Russian people celebrate the anniversary of the Soviet Union's defeat of Nazi Germany in 1945 with a military parade right in Moscow. But this year, the day may take on new significance. Western officials are now speculating that Russian President Vladimir Putin may use the annual celebration to officially declare war on the nation of Ukraine. State Department spokesman Ned Price gave his thoughts on the reports earlier this week. Watch.
I've seen the speculation that Russia may formally declare war. I suppose I would add that that would be a great irony if Moscow used the occasion of Victory Day to declare war, which in itself would allow them to surge conscripts in a way they're not able to do now, in a way that would be tantamount to revealing to the world that their war effort is failing, that they are floundering in their military campaign and military objectives.
So will Putin use this famous holiday to publicly declare a war on Ukraine? Joining me now to add some more insight into it is Senior Fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, Bill Roggio. Bill, good to see you again.
Thanks again, bud. Always a pleasure.
So just walk us through this, because I think that people see this, they see the news story, and the initial thought is, okay, isn't Russia already at war in Ukraine? So what would an official declaration of war do differently?
Yeah, Russia hasn't officially declared war. It just it says it's a military action, a special military operation is what it's called it. Declaring war would allow it to mobilize the conscripts. But that's just about it. And look, Russia is a state where if Putin decides to mobilize the conscripts without declaring war, he's going to do it. He doesn't need to declare war in order to do this. I do think the speculation about May 9th, I've been hearing about May 9th for the last month, that the Russians are going to declare victory. Now that we're hearing they're going to declare war. They're two very contradictory things, by the way. You had a Russian spokesman come out today and say this is absolutely untrue. We're not going to be declaring war on May 9th. And now that doesn't mean he's not lying. But, you know, there's been a lot of information out there that has been quite speculative about this war from the very beginning. Things like the ghost of Kiev and the incident on Snake Island. The question really, you know, we'll find out on May 9th, but we're going to find out whether this is actually one of those speculative items that didn't pan out, or whether it was actually true.
You know, Forbes is reporting that, quote, Russia has scaled down their May 9th Victory Day parade by almost 35%. The cuts are so dramatic and the planned parade so humiliating that Russia's President Vladimir Putin will likely do almost anything to keep the world from focusing overly much upon Russia's dwindling military prospect. What do you make of that? I mean, here's my concern, Bill, because at various phases here, it feels like we've been through numerous news cycles of Russia is just about to go, you know, kaput in terms of their military ability in Ukraine. And then sure enough, there's still a lot of fighting, there's still shelling, they're still in Ukraine. So what do you make of this analysis of the Victory Day parade and Russia's dwindling prospects?
Yeah, it makes sense to me that the Victory Day parade is going to be smaller than it normally would. It has a significant amount of its combat forces engaged in Ukraine right now. So Russia doesn't have the capacity right now to hold a massive parade, and nor should it. I mean, the focus of its military should be fighting and winning in Ukraine and not putting together a massive, the biggest Victory Day day parades on May 9th that it's ever had. So, you know, again, you know, you hit a key point there, Buck. We've heard a lot of contradictory information. This is what's made following this war so difficult. We've heard the Russian morale is low. They're running out of gas. They're, you know, all of these things. And yet they've run out of gas so many times that they remain entrenched in eastern and southern Ukraine. They're making small incremental gains in these areas. We don't know whether that's going to lead to victory or defeat for the Russians. But what I don't see is imminent collapse like we've continually heard for the past almost 2 months now.
I mean, here's a map of territories taken over by Russia in Ukraine and in and around the Donbas region here. So that's currently area that is under effectively under Russian control, right? So is there, you know, what I would want to know at this point, because it seems like we can't get a clear answer as to what Russia would find acceptable to end the conflict. I would want to know, given that we just had a variety of members of Congress, Nancy Pelosi was just over there and others meeting with Zelensky, what's an acceptable end state for the Ukrainian government right now, considering the loss of territory that's already occurred?
That's the key question. And to me, it isn't what the Russians want to end this war. The Russians want to take significant areas of the south and in the east. Without a doubt, I believe the Russians would like to take over the entirety of the Ukrainian territory on the Black Sea. That would require them to go to Odessa. But really, what would the Ukrainians settle for? Are they going to settle for Russia conquering territory and administering Ukrainian territory, probably somewhere over 10 to 15% of its territory if that happens? You know, where does this end? My concern here is, look, the Ukrainians, I think it's a small chance that the Ukrainians can drive the Russians out completely, but that seems to be what everyone's pushing for. There's a chance that the small chance that the Russians can have full military victory. Again, I don't think that's possible. Or there's a good chance that the fighting continues as it is now. And that is destroying the Ukrainian society. It's not just weakening the Russians. It's destroying Ukrainian society. And it could potentially lead to the collapse of the Ukrainian state. There needs to be some type of solution, as distasteful it is to everyone. There needs to be some type of solution. And also, we do risk coming up to the precipice of a nuclear conflict as well. So we have to be very careful about how we're acting. I don't see this type of thought being put in about what our next moves. Should we be talking to the Russians? Is there a way to get the Russians to draw back to the pre-war lines? I'm not hearing anything like that. I'm hearing on the Ukrainian side, Ukraine victory. On the Russian side, Russian annexation of significant territory in the south and east.
And what about the, you know, going back now, because we're months into this conflict, right? And Bill, we've been having you on to talk about this and update this from the very beginning. So in the early days, you remember all of the news coverage of the Biden administration financial and economic moves against Russia. And we were told in no uncertain terms that this was going to be a crushing blow to Russia's economy. And that if we just got the, you know, we put the SWIFT sanctions in place, we do all these things, Russia's, you know, almost like the Russian war machine's going to run out of gas and bullets, and so they won't have a choice. Or maybe they'll run out of bread and milk on the shelves in the stores in Moscow, you know, same idea. What's the reality of the economic, I don't know if we want to call it warfare, but the economic actions that were taken by NATO, the West, America against Russia up to this point?
They were well overhyped. I was highly skeptical of them at the beginning. There's a very interesting map that exists out there, and it shows the countries that oppose, right, that are on board with sanctioning Russia. And it really just winds up being Europe, Japan, and United States and Canada. Russia has a lot of ability to hit other markets. Without a doubt, the Russians are feeling it. They've lost money, but we should have learned with sanctions against Iraq, sanctions against Iran and other countries, that these types of things take years, if not decades, to really have a meaningful effect, particularly when the country being sanctioned is committed. And Russia can do things like build its own weapons, manufacture its own ammunition. It grows its own food. It produces its own energy. Maybe these sanctions make those things difficult and more costly. But if Putin and Russia is determined to continue this war, the sanctions will only have a marginal effect.
It's a lesson we keep learning about foreign policy over and over again, it seems. Kind of like the UN Security Council. Not exactly good at providing security. Thanks so much, Bill.
I couldn't agree
good to
with
see
you.
You.
More about
it. Yeah, it's
thank
yeah.
you.
Keep learning that one too. Good to see you. The head of the American Federation of Teachers, Randy Weingarten, is speaking out about a growing mental health crisis among America's students. How'd that happen, the whole crisis? Oh, that's right. Randy Weingarten made sure the school shut down because she's the commissar for the teachers' unions in the Democrat Party. We'll talk about this in quick hits. Stay with us. The head of the American Federation of Teachers takes gaslighting to a new level, and Dr. Deborah Birx is spreading misinformation of her own out there, or disinformation, same thing. We've got stories on quick hits. Let's get into it. As you know, I call her the education commissar because she is a Marxist community organizer, radical, pretending to be concerned with the interests of children, when really all she's concerned with are the interests of the socialist Democrats who she represents and that she wields power in the name of for the teachers' unions. That's what this all is. Teachers' unions are a huge source of funding for the Democrat Party, and the teachers' unions, as you know, are also always, always supportive of Democrats in a monolithic fashion. So it's particularly rich when you have Randy Weingarten, who is responsible for so much of the misery our children have gone through, telling everybody that our kids are in crisis because of the shutdown for schooling or 2 years of schooling that she demanded on behalf of the teachers' unions and worked with the White House to get. Watch.
Our kids are in crisis. And we had a mental health crisis before COVID, but with, and Dr. Eng will talk about this far better than I do, but within, but for 2 years of disruption, 2 years of looking at the screens, 2 years of not having a normal kind of routine and rhythm. Recovery is really tough.
Yeah, she doesn't care. She just doesn't care. Not really, because she would have cared when schools were shut down and people like me were saying, why are they shut down? Kids aren't at risk. Dr. Birx, another person who got it very, very wrong on COVID, seems to think that the elderly are susceptible to COVID. Yeah, that's true. As children are susceptible to COVID. No, wrong. Has she been asleep for like the last 2 years? Watch.
How do you judge risk? I have to judge it every day because, like you, I have children under five, unvaccinated grandchildren, and I have a 93-year-old that lives in our house. So I have to constantly be aware of my risk, yet I have to work. And I think that's just what we need to do. If you have vulnerable people in your household, whether it's children or elderly, you have to continually assess your risk.
Children are not at risk from COVID. What is wrong? The reason there's not a vaccine for children under five is because in the clinical trials, they couldn't actually show any material benefit worth making kids get the shot in the first place in that age group. And then, of course, there's Bill Gates. Talked about him yesterday. The walking pregnant man emoji, according to Elon Musk. Bill Gates assures us that COVID-19 came from bats. Watch.
How do we prevent something where we don't even understand how it came to be? Like, you know, are there labs where they need to do better at you know, enclosing the work that they're doing? I understand that they have to do the work, but how do we figure that out and how do we move forward in that realm?
Well, we should certainly be careful about lab safety. It's quite clear in this case that it came across through animals. Mm-hmm. And almost all our diseases, like HIV, crossed over from chimpanzees in Africa quite some time ago. Ebola came from bats. This also, with one step in between, came from bats.
It's actually not clear that that's the case, but he, who cares? Bill Gates is full of a lot of you-know-what. All right, everybody, that's it for tonight's Hold the Line. The No Spin News with Bill O'Reilly is next. Shields high.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to improving the lives of America's veterans, first responders, and their families. For over 20 years, the foundation has helped America keep its solemn promise to never forget. Tunnel to Towers provides mortgage-free homes to Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders with young children, and build specially adapted smart homes for catastrophically injured veterans, as well as work to eradicate veteran homelessness. David Marshall served in the Army during World War II and fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He's never forgotten the sacrifices of his comrades in arms, nor the efforts of first responders on 9/11 and in the days and months that followed. He is a loyal and proud foundation donor. Tunnel to Towers is committed to supporting veterans, first responders, and their families, and so many of them need your help. Join the foundation on its mission to do good and never forget. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
From original art and diplomas to ticket stubs and the keys to your first home, we all have mementos we'd love to put on display. Framebridge is the easy and affordable way to custom frame just about anything, with fair upfront pricing based on the size of your item and fast, free shipping. Plus, your happiness is guaranteed. See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit Framebridge.com or a local Framebridge store to get started. That's Framebridge.com.
Our kids have said to us since we moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
see what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.